It's Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM. Andy Bulbarts joined alongside Matt Douglas, and it's time now for us to return to our Budweiser's From the Sidelines segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenient Sunoco. We welcome in Fox 8's very own John Tellis to talk some Browns and high school football as usual. JT, it's always a pleasure to have you on, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today, Bull? What's going on, buddy?
Oh, same old, same old. It's just another typical Wednesday here in Lorain County having some fun, and it's not been so fun for those in Berea of late. Holy smokes, this has been a very difficult season for the Browns. It has been a disaster, no question, and, you know, I think you could point fingers in all kinds of different directions, but, I mean, as per the usual, when quarterbacks do well, they sometimes get too much of the fame, and when they lose, they get too much of the blame. So we'll start with that position. Wait, Baker Mayfield, and I think we've tried to equate some of his issues this year to the offensive line, but even when he has not been under pressure, his quarterback rating has been pretty low. Can you put your finger on what might have changed over the course of the past year?
Well, I'll tell you what, you say low, he's leading the pack, so that's certainly not a category, Bull, that you want to be the best at, or as it were in this case, the worst at. His quarterback rating is 75.1. That's with no pressure. So, all right, let's look at some of what's going on there. I don't believe, because of the offensive line as part of the situation, I don't believe they take many shots down the field. So fewer shots down the field means less respect that the defenses have for that deep ball, which means it just scrunches the deep up, that second-level defense a little bit tighter for Baker to find guys. So he still looks to be antsy in some way, shape, or form. Maybe doesn't have as much trust with the offensive line. And his throws don't seem to have not just the accuracy, but the touch that we saw a year ago. You notice a lot of the times he's over-firing guys, and he's throwing howitzers at guys that are only 15 yards away. So he's lost some of that touch. The internal clock is probably beating a little bit quicker. And when you've got that back on the defense not respecting the deep ball, I think it just makes his decision-making process all the more something that you've got to discern and see. It's got to be crystal clear. It's got to be right on. It's got to make the read and deliver the ball. And I think his decision-making is probably not as much different this year than a year ago. It's the execution of how he gets the ball downfield and his processing of what is open. I don't think his decision-making is much different from any of the other quarterbacks, whether it's a Deshaun Watson or Patrick Mahomes when he's healthy, or Josh Allen, let's give him as an example, who's coming into town this coming weekend. It's just that tiny little window that he has. A year ago, they were pretty much on. This year, they're a little left, a little right. They're clanking off a guy's hands, and he's paying for it. And I think that's probably, in a nutshell, some of the reasons why he's having a tough year. Everybody's kind of caught up to him. So, obviously, he and the coaches, they've got to adjust a lot.
Yeah, no question about that. And, well, you look at what happened on Sunday against the Broncos, lots of oddities in that game. They had fewer penalties. I mean, they won the turnover battle. They won the time of possession battle. But, you know, despite all of that, they still came out of the wrong end of the decision.
Yeah, and I think you can also point to some of the coaching decisions. Why was he, you know, challenging something that was obvious that you figured they would never overturn, whether it was that spot when Baker dove for the first down? It just wasn't, you know, so cut and dried. You know, you could see if a guy placed a ball half a yard or a yard behind where you're supposed to, you know, the naked eye could see it, but they just didn't have enough evidence with all the bodies flying around where Baker dove to the ground and was tackled. You just, you know, so that's something you ill-advised. You lose a timeout because of that. And then the scratch-your-head stuff with having Dontrell Hilliard in the game at clutch and decisive moments instead of the best running back that they have and one of the top five in the league in Nick Chubb. Those are scratch-your-head kinds of things. So, you know, certainly there's an incredible amount that Freddie can be doing better. And you can talk about his longevity or lack thereof, but he's just not coaching on Sunday afternoon the optimum level that you would want for a football team to navigate through a tough schedule.
Well, the red zone issues certainly popped up on Sunday, and that's a topic that we've discussed before for sure. You know, how much do you think Kareem Hunt's arrival could help out with something like that? And I guess while we're on the topic of Hunt as well, how much of a role do you think he's going to play on Sunday?
Well, I know they've got to use him. They have to be very optimum how they put him on the field. He's got so many talents. They can't. If they put Dontrell Hilliard into the game at any second of that 3 hours on Sunday afternoon for anything other than special teams play, it's just not what you should do, period. You've got two of the top running backs in the league. Obviously, Kareem's going to have a little bit of rust. We'll see that. It's been almost a full year. People forget he was suspended the last five games of last year, so almost a full year he hasn't played in a live-action game. So there's going to be some problems there. But if they cannot figure out how to use a kid with this much talent in complementary fashions or in other fashions with someone like Nick Chubb, I'm not saying they have to be on the field together. I'm just saying complementing each other, the running back in certain situations. If they can't figure out a way, then they might as well just close up the building here at 76 Lou Groza Boulevard, because that's coaching. And if you can't do it, you can't execute it to have these guys be complementary talent-wise to each other and move those move the chains down the field, then they're just wasting their time.
Fox 8's very own John Telich joining us on our Budweiser's From the Sidelines segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco. JT, you take a look at what this team's done defensively of late, and I know they try to change some things up a little bit with their defensive alignment. You think that's caused some more problems? Again, because this defense certainly had such high hopes going into this season, and not that they were torched on Sunday against the Broncos, but it just seemed like they had a really hard time getting off the field.
Yeah, I know that, you know, Steve Wilks' calling card has been the 4-2-5. They played some 4-3. You had an extra linebacker out there on Sunday, and Darius Taylor. But it still comes down to the basics of all time. It's the blocking and the tackling, and they tackled poorly on Sunday. And certainly one of the players tackled poorly enough to be the subject of tweets, and then he lost his job because he responded to those tweets. But they're just not, you know, the defensive line has not been what you would expect. This is a team that coming into the season, you thought the defensive line would be the calling card. And I know Olivier Vernon got nicked in the game and all that sort of stuff, but they were not a dominant factor in that contest against a guy who had never had a snap in an NFL game. And again, that comes down to obviously lack of execution, and then the coaching should be better or could have been better to put them in better situations to be successful. I don't know what it is, Bull. Do you just streamline everything? I can recall, and this is kind of like old guy get off my lawn type stuff, but we used to, back in the day, when Augie Basu, the legendary coach, was the coach of Benedictine, you could talk to a lot of the old-timers that played at Benedictine High. They had very few plays in their playbook. They just executed the living daylights out of them. And it really wasn't rocket science. It was just fundamental football, block better, tackle better. And that's, you know, part of what is missing here in Cleveland. Such poor tackling on one play alone. I mean, you could put that Noah Fant 75-yarder up as a piece of video to show defenses across the league, defenses in college, high school defenses, and Pop Warner defenses. This is how you do not tackle an individual. And three people had an opportunity to do it on one play, and all three failed. Not a good look.
No, not a good look at all. And I think some of that does come down to coaching as well, lack of execution. And I think we're expecting Freddie Kitchens to start pressing some of the right buttons. And we've got to at least bring this up, because we're coming up on a very important 10 or 11-day stretch for this team where they're taking on two teams that have put together some decent seasons. We're talking about the Bills, who they play on Sunday at 6-2, and the Steelers, who have been somewhat surprising without Ben Roethlisberger. They're 4-4 on the year. They'll take on those two teams again in an 11-day stretch. Boy, I don't know if Freddie can survive going 0-2, or if they go 1-1, do you think that we could be looking at some kind of a change, whether that means a coordinator has to go or maybe they take the play calling duties away from Freddie Kitchens?
I think if they get blown out in the next two games to two of these teams, obviously 1-6-2, and that's, you know, it's a very strong record, although we can argue that the Buffalo Bills, those six wins, the combined record of the teams they faced is 9-41. So, you know, you can sit back and say these guys, you know, obviously aren't the greatest of opponents for the Buffalo Bills. But if they get blown out by Buffalo, they get blown out by the Steelers, who, as you aptly mentioned, Bull, you know, their season was on the brink early when they lost Big Ben, and they've somehow been able to struggle their way to a 4-4 record, which is an accomplishment. And I guess you go right back to the nice job by Mike Tomlin and a nice job by McDermott in Buffalo. I would think he lasts to the end of the year. I really would. And I would like nothing more than to see him find the magic elixir to all of a sudden be better at his craft and lead this team to, I don't know, six out of eight, 6-2 in the second half of the schedule. And I'd love to see him back here next year. I don't have much confidence in that based on the first eight games. And so, you know, I think we will be at a loggerhead. I get the impression, especially after listening to the reporting that Steve Wyche of the NFL Network did vis-a-vis Dorsey wanting to pretty much go with Freddie the rest of this season. If they get blown out in the next couple of games, I kind of don't like to play those what-ifs, but if they do, you know, then you're looking at First Energy Stadium on Sunday afternoons, basically with, you know, you got tumbleweed going down the middle of the field in the second half with nobody in the stands and people upset. Not a good look. And they're already looking at that secondary ticket market this week and next week, where you're probably going to have more and more Bills fans buying tickets. Hey, let's take a trip to Cleveland. It's 3 hours away. Our loved Bills are 6-2 on the year. This will be a great opportunity. So you'll see more of that Bills presence at First Energy Stadium on Sunday. And then you're definitely going to see some of that Steeler presence on Thursday night of the next week. I don't know. There's opportunities for them to stabilize this thing and to get some kind of momentum going. But they have dug they've dug the Grand Canyon, and they don't have enough stepladders to get out of the thing right now.
Difficult to argue that, and I think part of that comes back around to this next issue here, and that would be a series of issues with the culture in that locker room. I mean, you alluded to the Whitehead situation a few moments ago. I mean, I certainly think that when you talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly, that certainly falls into the latter of those three categories. And, you know, we've seen some things happen throughout the course of the year that can't help but make us question the culture in that locker room. And I don't know. I mean, I think it's very difficult for us to sit here right now and think that any of that's going to change.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty high proposition, Bull. You're absolutely right. And, you know, I think every week now I have mentioned that C word, and I can recall John Dorsey saying establish a culture in Cleveland. And I just don't see a culture in Cleveland where you've got the quarterback at war with a reporter, or the quarterback, involved in a pregame thing with a Pro Bowl safety and Richard Sherman. And then, of course, all the issues with OBJ and his shoes or his visor or his knees not being covered. And I'm sure I'm missing something. The watch, yes, the very expensive watch. Just some stuff that you just, you know, I can't picture the people in Pittsburgh having a player. Well, they did have Antonio Brown, and they kind of ended that relationship. But I just can't imagine many other organizations having to deal with this type of stuff. So it goes right back to the core of the problem, and that's lack of an institutional culture that does not cotton to this kind of stuff happening, where they're majoring basically in the minor. And issues popping up that get in the way of just the day-to-day execution. Could you imagine Bill Belichick if OBJ was wearing the clown shoes? Come on now. And so that, you know, that goes back to the culture of the team and the coach and the people that put the coach in place. Those are the ones that obviously have to be held accountable. And, you know, nobody wants to go on the radio every week and talk about the failings of something, but this is a 2-6 football team. And quoting the great Freddie Kitchens, you are what your record says you are. And I think Bill Parcells and everybody else in football has said that at one time or another, and truer words have never been spoken.
That leads me into our very next question, the last Browns topic before we dive into some high school football. You are what your record says you are. Well, right now the Bills are 6-2, right? So, I mean, this is a team that has certainly done a pretty nice job. You know, they've played some teams that aren't all that great, but look, 6-2 is 6-2, right?
Yeah, it is 6-2, and there are some of those games that, you know, you can sit back and say, you know, they should have lost, but they did eke out a win. So I think what they've done there is they've just made things manageable for Josh Allen. He's certainly not on the list of quarterbacks like Rodgers or Breeze or Mahomes and company. But, you know, they've tried to do whatever they could to simplify things for him and to make those short throws to move the ball down the field. And you know, basically Buffalo is Cleveland. Cleveland is Buffalo. I know that very well. I grew up in Cleveland, and I worked 2 years as a TV sports guy in Buffalo, so I know how those fans are towards their team. And we've seen them more and more here in recent years, how they are towards their team when you're talking about, when you're talking about a situation where they've got the fans in their lots, you know, diving off of the tops of RVs onto tables. And very much they're kind of, you know, that's Cleveland. Cleveland is Buffalo. Buffalo is Cleveland. And the fan base is so, you know, in love with their football team and want nothing more than for them to be successful. And right now for a team to be 2-6 in Cleveland, I frankly, Bull, if we were to have a blind taste test on this whole thing, you would have thought prior to the season beginning that in week, you know, in the ninth game of the season at First Energy Stadium on Sunday afternoon at 1:00, the 6-2 team would be the Cleveland Browns, and the 2-6 team would be the Buffalo Bills. But obviously, it's reversed.
Yes, absolutely. Well, playoffs may be out of the discussion for the Browns, my friend, but not for high school football in this area.
Yeah,
there
baby.
Is, yeah, there's plenty of it, my man. And, you know, we're excited around here. We've got 5 games to cover between Friday and Saturday all together. You will be a very busy man, I know, on Friday, but I'm sure on Saturday as well. What games in particular do you have your eyes on?
Well, I'm just curious to see. Cleveland Heights has really had a great year. They're 9-1. They're an excellent team. And Max Stevens is doing a nice job, but nobody has gotten within a country mile of the Mentor Cardinals this year. Not Euclid, who came in high-powered and with a real good record, not any other team that they faced, including what they did early in their pre-league schedule with what they've done. So I'd like to see how things shape up with Mentor and with those guys from Cleveland Heights. And, of course, out your way with Avon Lake and Avon both hosting, home games. Curious to see how well they perform. There's just I'm kind of excited to see if the association does enact next year or maybe the year after that little germ of an idea, seed of an idea that they floated out about potentially having 12 teams per region make the playoffs with the top four seeds getting first round buys. It's kind of interesting. It's almost to the point where, you know, high school basketball, where everybody gets an invitation to the dance. And I'd like to see if that goes, how that impacts the preseason, how that impacts how teams prepare for a full year, because you're going to be fighting like crazy to get a first round buy so you can rest your guys at the most important time of the year. I'm just curious to see what happens. But barring that, there's just some excellent matchups this week. And this is the fun part, too, because those teams that work their butts off to get a higher seed get a chance to have that home game.
Yeah, and there are plenty of great matchups to go around this Friday and this Saturday for sure. JT, always a lot of fun, my friend. Always appreciate you making some time for us every week, and we look forward to doing this again next Wednesday.
See you then, my buddy. Thanks.
Thanks, JT. Again, that's Fox 8's very own John Telich joining us on our Budweiser's From the Sideline segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco. Let's get to a break here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Matt Douglas and I will come back with more after this here on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM.